Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Just a little bit more than a minute past the hour, a minute past 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com, available to you via a multiplicity of platforms, including but not limited to the Horn's very own website, headonradionetwork.com, as well as iTunes Radio, as well as podcasting, as well as Stitcher Radio, as well as Tuner Internet Radio, as well as TuneIn Radio. And I think we're on most internet radio players, frankly, which is very cool. So however you listen, we're just mighty happy that you do. It is the 20th day of April, 2012. I say that so folks won't think, oh, damn, it's another rerun. No, I'm really here, and plan to be, with any luck at all, here next week as well. And then it gets crazy again. Let's go over the schedule real quick. Just so you'll know, from the 4th to the 9th of May, I am on the road. It's not like Bill Maher where he says, you know, I'll be playing Harris in Reno. No, this is advocacy work. This is mountaintop removal work. From the 4th to the 9th of May, I will be on the road. Part of that time, of course, is weekend, so the shows I'll miss will be the 4th and the 7th, 8th, 9th. So that's a Friday, a Monday, Tuesday, and a Wednesday. Part of that time, the first part of that time, will be in Boston, and the second half of that time I will be in Charlotte, North Carolina. We will be doing work against Bank of America, who of course continues to finance mountaintop removal. So we'll be trying to make sure that the shareholders understand that when they have a direct connection to the blood that is shed here in central Appalachia, in amongst the hollers and what used to be hills, and the hollers that were filled in by valley fills and such like. So that's what that is. And then between May the 17th and the 21st or 22nd of May, I will also be on the road in that instance in Wisconsin. Part of that will be an appearance at the one of the regional Fight and Bob Fests, this particular one, as well as a couple of other events, but this particular Fight and Bob being in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, if I recall correctly. So those are the days that I know that I'm out of here, so please mark your calendars accordingly. And I'll tell you as much as I can about these things as they go forward. There may be other instances of me having to be gone, but right now they are not scheduled. So unless it's something that just comes up at the last minute and is of some sort of urgent nature, plan on a regular schedule of broadcasts next week. Yay! I know it makes me happy. So that's where we are. A very kind thank you for a generous contribution yesterday evening, as well as the three that came in the days while I was gone. That did, in fact, enable us to pay a critical bill that would have made things rather difficult to do a show this evening. But that bill is kindly paid. If you go and look at the little widget at headonradionetwork.com, you can see where we presently stand in terms of fundraising for the month. And we are about $105 over the halfway mark. We need to keep that. We need to continue on that because, well, bills like to be paid, and that's all I can say. The PayPal button is there, as is the snail mail address at the contribute tab. So however you prefer, we aggregate them all, and that becomes part of that number. Now, it's Friday. Granted, last night was my first night on the air in quite some time, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So I'm not sure what last night felt like. Tonight doesn't feel like Friday, but it is Friday, and it is Friday on the front porch. So that means that you may bring to the process just about anything you want to bring. But then again, that's always, you always can. It's just, I guess, on Fridays we're a little bit more lighthearted, maybe a little bit more off the beaten path. You know, two roads diverged in a yellow wood, that kind of thing, that whole Robert Frost, you know, my little horse must think it queer for me to stop without a pool hall near, without a beer joint near, whatever he wrote. But yeah, Friday's just a little bit bubble off plum, if you will. And with that in mind, some interesting stories are out there for the evening, and I thought I would just tell you before going on. A big part of this is just sort of sharing the day-to-day of our lives, our existences. You know, last night, if you were listening, and by the way, I'm not sure if the podcast got to Ben from last night or not, so I am uploading that file to him as we speak so that that will be available. I'll have that link for him in fairly short order. He's doing some home beautification there. And I'm not, he said he wasn't sure if it grabbed it or not. But anyway, the podcast for last night will go up. But when I go, anybody who has ever, no, what I was going to say is one of the beautiful things that happens here is that because we do sort of treat each other like family, we have a tendency to make sure that family knows what's going on. And thus it was that last night Brother Albert shared the happy news of the new addition coming for his family, and it just makes you feel all warm to think about it. It's lovely. And anybody with a family who has ever had to go away and travel knows that one of the worst parts about it is that while you're gone, you don't necessarily know, well, you're not plugged in. You don't know what's going on back at home. And God knows, while I'm gone, I miss Agnes like a guy on the moon misses breathing. And I flatter myself to think that she misses me too. So last night, I was dog tired, and I left the studio, and we sat, you know, Mike and Carol Brady like there at the end of the day, you know, with my reading glasses on. Or you can think of that one of those final scenes from Young Frankenstein with Agnes in the role of where'd that brain cell go? And I in the role of the monster with the little pince-nez glasses on reading the Wall Street Journal. Something like that. And she tells me, we've got to talk. And so she tells me of this little incident that transpired down in one of the local stores. We've got a little drug store down there that's a chain. And she tells me how this woman, and small town life is like this. After she had told me this story, I got to thinking, you know, you hear stories about, for instance, what it's like to be, and those of you who are the Brandon and Kim and some of the others who are there in the city can confirm this, Keith. that New York is sometimes said to be an impersonal place, and you're not. I've always been told, you know, hillbilly that I am, that if you ever go to New York, Bob, you don't want to be walking down the street looking people in the eye. Don't do that, Bob. Okay. And you can think, oh my, that's just not very friendly, is it? But it is. Because at its core, it means that people are actively engaged in, and this is a technical term, minding their own business. I think of a scene from one of my favorite films, The In-Laws, with Peter Falk and Alan Arkin, that takes place. There's a scene that takes place in a deli where everyone, with the shouting between the two, has risen to the point that everybody in the deli is looking, and one of them turns around and says, get back to your lunch. Do I meddle in your business? You're right. Well, that's not how it is in small-town America. Everybody's involved in everybody else's business, especially if some of one's business is things that maybe the rest of the community doesn't agree with, you know, like objecting to blowing up mountains and that kind of thing. So, Agnes tells me this story of minding her own business down in the store. And this woman that she would not know from neither Adam's nor Eve's house cat coming up and saying something unsavory to her. And it's moments like this where only almost 19 years of marriage can save you. Because it was clear she was distraught. But I am married to such a strong and determined, lovely yet fearsome woman that by the time she was done telling me the story, and this is not me being unsympathetic, I was damn near reduced to tears. Because this woman says something unsavory to her. I should probably get Agnes back here to... And just walked up and said it, you know? Because, I don't know, her life was so poor, so bereft, so miserable that she felt like she had to say it. And I should probably get Agnes back here to tell the story. But she turns to the woman. And honest to God, every last part of this began to... There was some scene, and you know how it is with me. There was some scene from some movie that it was reminiscent of, he said, hanging his preposition out to dry. And she tells me, she said, Bob, it was awful. Because I turned around and I stuck my hand out and I wagged my finger at her, and the first thing I thought was that, you know, I could hear the soundtrack from Mortal Kombat, you know, the dum 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 dum, and then the get over here. And the woman came over and she said, "Say that again." And the woman said what she'd said again. And Agnes said, "Honey, it was terrible. The next thing I knew, I was crouching. You know, kind of hunkered down, and again, get over here, or you know, Kali Ma," and she reaches out and just grabs the woman's beating heart out of her chest. I said, "Well, what happened? What happened then?" She said, "I leaned over to her, and I said, run." Just another day in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia. I said, "What do you mean?" She said, I looked her in the eye and I said, "Run." So immediately we shift movies, and now we're in Shane with Jack Palance saying, "Pick up the gun." Just mind-boggling. I said, yeah, run? She said, yeah. I looked at her and I said, run. And then I said, one, two. And she said, long about then, she got the message. And she turned tail and hightailed it back up the aisle of the store and out. And I could just, you know, I could imagine like the little pine tree shaped the car air fresheners that hang on the little doodad trees. They're just kind of as the woman went past. And I said, and did you chase her? And she said, no, I walked. You know. Or maybe she was Yul Brynner from Westworld, the killer cybernetic cowboy who didn't chase anything by running. He just walked with determination, knowing that he would eventually catch his prey. And it's just another day. I have this vision of my darling red-headed Ellie Mae. Paw, I've got the heathen up the tree. Run. And bless her heart, it had been very stressful to her, but by the time I was done, I had her laughing. And the tears, not of grief or fear or sadness, but the tears of pure laughter were rolling out of her eyes. You know, what is this? In 11 days? In 11 days, we shall have been married for 19 years. And I think that's one of the treasures. Being able to take our little horrors, and they do come along, whether you're in New York City, Fayette County, West Virginia, or anywhere in between or out further away. These things happen. But just the idea of her looking that woman in the eye, because it can be terrifying. Run. I said, who was she? She said, I don't know. I guess it was just screw with the redheaded lady day. And I happened to be conveniently located. Get over here. And then I just looked at her, and I kind of crouched down, and I said, one. Has anybody ever heard Clint Eastwood count? Has Clint Eastwood ever done Sesame Street? One. Two. Well, am I going to get to three? Do you feel lucky, punk? But she's feeling much better now, Agnes is. She said, I was scared to death that I was going to wind up brawling in the middle. No, honey, no brawling. That dumbass Sarah Palin saying she's a mama grizzly, horse feathers. Agnes would be picking her teeth with Sarah Palin's bones before she knew she'd been hit. Run. I guess it's just because I'm a living embodiment of movie clips and stuff, but I love that woman. And I don't know why people feel like they need to come up and, you know, just say stuff. Ugh. But Agnes is feeling ever so much. So that's
Yeah, that's how the exhausted Thursday ended and the long Friday began. But it is Friday on the front porch, and there's all kinds of stuff that you can bring to the table. I thought we would at least get started with something. Yes, it's stupid. Yes, it's bigoted. Yes, it's ignorant. But by the same token, it's funny, too. Down in Tennessee, where the teabaggers are doing everything in their power to make one of the more enlightened of the southern states look as bad as knuckle-walking, hate-filled Alabama Stan and Mississippi Stan. Although most of it's Alabama Stan at this point. No, the state legislature of Tennessee, as the story I'm looking at by Scott Keyes over at Think Progress Notes, Tennessee has 8% unemployment. Tennessee has profound problems, but their legislature has been proven itself, and it's a Republican legislature, has proven itself more concerned with its brand spanking new monkey law. It's no longer a monkey bill, it's a monkey law. Monkey see, monkey legislate. Teabagging monkeys. The clever monkeys of the Tennessee State House. Oh, look at them as they pass their bills around. Oh, they have passed SB 3310. SB 3310 has to do with abstinence and that great scourge of Jesus land, teen pregnancy. A couple of days before, a story had come out that while the number of teen births in the United States had dropped once more in 2010, and almost every state saw a decrease in teen pregnancy, 9% dropped to about 34 teen pregnancies per 1,000 girls ages 15 through 19, and the drop was visible statistically in all racial and ethnic groups. Well, Mississippi Stan has the highest teen birth rate yet at 55 births per 1,000 girls. To break it down a little bit more, if you get 100 girls in a high school gymnasium in Mississippi Stan, 5.5 of them will be pregnant. Twenty-six states have abstinence only, or abstinence is best, pregnancy prevention programs. Mm-hmm. Mississippi Stan has no sex education requirement whatsoever in its public schools, you know, because Jesus wouldn't like it. There's no requirement whatsoever. If it does wander its way into the classroom somewhere between, whatever they call home ec these days, and maybe the class on planaria in biology, then the teacher is allowed to say, now, y'all, not having sex is about the only way to keep from getting pregnant. So don't y'all have sex, okay? Okay. And lo and behold, you get that 55 in 1,000 teen pregnancy rate in abstinence-only Mississippi Stan. Well, like I said, the teabaggers and right-wingers are desperate to make sure that Tennessee takes its place, not among enlightened southern states, but among southern states with profound intellectual problems. Enter SB 3310, a bill that would update the state's abstinence-based sex education curriculum. Update it. Well, that sounds like a good thing, Bob. Maybe they'll mention that if you're going to have sex, you might want to make sure you have a condom on. Maybe keep from spreading disease. No, not that kind of update, and that's not the kind of updating we do in Jesus land. No, they're updating to try to make sure that they cover all the bases. You know, first base, second base, third base. Under the shirt, over the bra, you know, second base. It was a 28-1 in favor vote in the Senate of the state of Tennessee to make sure that the abstinence-based sex education curriculum in said state included a warning that... No, really. Holding hands is a gateway sexual activity. Really. Holding hands. Are we amazed? Well, I guess we would be if it was anywhere but Jesus land. Let's see. Other gateway sexual activities. Kissing. Kissing is a gateway sexual activity. You know, from the kiss to the deal. It's just a couple of sinful buttons away. Oh, I've got so many things that could serve as bumper music for this. One wonders, and it's Friday, and we do often play some music on Fridays. One wonders if hand-holding music is therefore also a gateway activity. Because if that's the case, well, I mean, come on. Best not be playing this on any radio stations in Tennessee, right? Jesus, I done forgot about the touching you part. That's definitely gateway sexual activity. Gonna have to ban that in Tennessee stand, too. Bet you do, degenerates. Yeah, see, you don't want to hide his love. I mean, we know what that means. That's all just code. Next thing you know, well, where do you reckon all them teen pregnancies come from? How bored are they in the Tennessee State Legislature? The Isaac just sent along to me, why are SB 3310 and 3621 needed in Tennessee? This bill is needed for several reasons. Where did you find this, Isaac? First, some school districts base their sex education programs upon comprehensive sex ed curriculums. These curriculums, and actually they're not curriculums, they're curricula, tend to be extremely comprehensive in terms of describing and promoting different kinds of sexual activity. However, they are anything but comprehensive in dealing with the non-sexual consequences from engaging in premarital and sexual activity. And they have not been successful in reducing teen sex. The failure of comprehensive sex ed is explained in this FAQ, link. Abstinence-centered curricula focus on the whole person. They help students understand the health, economic, and societal benefits of refraining from non-marital sex. Encourage students to engage in goal setting and do not promote gateway sexual activities have proven to be much more successful. Second, as explained in the next FAQ, Tennessee school districts have been developing their own sex education programs with little guidance from the state. As a result, although state law currently emphasizes abstinence until marriage in general terms as one of several focuses of such programs, less than half of the school districts responding to a major survey, it's a major survey, a major award, Fredile, listed it as one of their three main goals in their individual programs. One organization authorized to teach sex education in Knox County mentions abstinence only two or three times in its detailed 55-page curriculum for its course. Third, while current law provides that such programs shall emphasize abstinence from sexual relations outside of marriage, the terms abstinence and sexual relations are not defined. As a result, an instructor currently could teach all types of sexual activity to students but vaginal intercourse and say that he or she is complying with the law. Now what is this, Isaac? Are you trying to just want me to put the straw in the tequila bottle? Is that the goal here? And fourth, under current law, there is no accountability if an instructor or outside organization teaches a sex education class in violation of the standards set forth in the law. The deficiencies in the current law are dramatically demonstrated by two real-life situations. The sex education course given at Hillsborough High School in Nashville, and Planned Parenthood, which promotes all types of sexual activity to teens except intercourse, teaching sex education courses in Tennessee schools. So we've got to tell them about the hand-holding. Mind-boggling. And by the way, because of this clarification, this guidance, this expansion, this definition that holding hands is gateway sexual activity, it can get you sued. It was posted over at Daily Coast. If your teacher teaches you anything about sex that isn't specifically on the approved curriculum, like demonstrating holding hands for the class instead of quietly tisking about the dangers it poses, they can be sued. Now, what we want to do here in the Tea Party is we want to end these government intrusions into our lives, unless it's really dumbass government intrusions that we feel need to take place in your lives, not ours, yours. We're going to protect you from yourself. Because, you know, we got them shoe leather level IQs, and we ain't afraid to use them. hand-holding. And it goes on like this. But it is Friday on the front porch, and what you have to say is far more important. Among other things, I do want to pass along a couple of emails. Heard from Robert. He said, I moved house and have been offline for 10 days. I was reconnected at midday Friday, local time. I'm so happy, I'm offering a match dollar for dollar up to $100, any donations made during Friday's show. So there's no carryover on this. But if you give 10, it turns into 20. If you give 20, it turns into 40 this evening, courtesy up to a total of, by all givers, of $100. So if 10 people contribute to the Thrifty 250 to the tune of $10 each, then that means it'll actually turn into $200 because Robert's standing there ready, willing, and able to match dollar for dollar up to $100. And that is mighty generous, and we're glad to have him back on back online. He says, by the way, I haven't been into McDonald's since 1998, and yes, I was dragged into that one. I know the feeling. Thank you very kindly. He also notes that petrol prices in Australia are at present, they have at present been on the rise. And it it doesn't, well, our, the Australian and the American dollar are very close right now. He said, just so people know, petrol reached $1.60 a liter this week. If I've done my sums correctly, that's around $5.92, $5.92 for a U.S. gallon, or about $6.01 U.S. dollars for a gallon. On average, the price per liter has been around $1.30 to $1.40 for some time. So yeah, that, you know, the oil industry is raping the globe, and doing so with a smile. And I've got an email here from our buddy Scott of Beat the Swede fame that needs to be gone into here presently. And we will. A little shout-out. Mike has written in, and he says, I'm sending a donation to support the work of AIC, the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign. I'm going to talk to my wife tonight about it, and we'll probably get it in the mail over the weekend. But another question. He says, and see, this is neat, because family worries about family. Have you heard from Tracy in California recently? Seems like a while since she's called into the show. I've been thinking of her. Please let her know one way or the other that we're thinking of her and we'd like to hear from her soon. That's from Mike. And that's mighty nice. So that's kind of where we get started. Bill in Cleveland, we talked to Bill for a little while last night. He says, hand-holding? The only hand-holding problem I had ever had was holding a woman's hand out of my pocket. The George Jetson problem, I guess, is what Bill is alluding to. So that is where we start. It is by no means where we end. I guess there's a new game out there. Call it the Hinky Jinky, not the Hokey Pokey, the Hinky Jinky. This guy's a real delight. You'll love hearing about him. But we're not going to do that right now. We're going to take a little break and give the phones a chance to light up. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on your nickel. If you don't want us to have the cost of the toll charges, you can dial 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. We've even been known to do a little hand-holding around here. Agnes and me, of course, that's how we wound up with all these teenagers all over the house. it's a gateway. It really is. It's just, you know, just like chewing gum is a gateway to heroin, hand-holding. Gateway to unabstinence. Elbow sex. Stuff like that. This is The Horn. It's Friday on the Front Porch.
Feeling done in. Couldn't win. I'd only ever kissed before.
You mean she?
I thought there's no use getting into heavy petting. It only leads to trouble and feet wetting. Now all I want to know is how to go. I've tasted blood and I want more.
More, more, more.
I'll put up no resistance. I want to stay the distance. I've got an itch to scratch.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Oh, I love it when the technology completely goes south on me. Anyway, welcome back. That little interlude there. It just had to be done, didn't it? Note in from Jim. You're gonna do the time warp tonight, Brad? No. Now, doggone it. No. Dr. John writing in, by the way. Subject line, hand-holding. Hi, I'm Bob, by the way. So odd. Wife and I hold hands all the time. Why, just today in the grocery store, we held hands. No babies yet. Guess we're doing it wrong. And you are, John, you are. Because, see, nobody has come along, you know, sort of like that talking snake slithering his way out on the branch of the tree to whisper and explain that that's a gateway sexual activity, that hand-holding. Because once you know it's a gateway sexual activity, well, then the next thing you know, that you're swinging from the chandelier in the Peachtree Plaza in Atlanta. It just happens that way. Although, I don't know, that certainly does spice up the hand-holding just a little bit. Maybe there's a sort of subplot of Americans for hand-holding or something in Tennessee. There's not enough hand-holding going on. Let's tell the teenagers not to do it. Jesus. My country. We are afflicted by to stupid. Well, then again, Jack in Shreveport, you're absolutely right. Bob, it seems that it might be Tennessee that's doing the time warp. You know, backwards. That pelvic thrust backward. Well, stop it. And many thanks. We are $20 along the way toward matching Robert's 100. So there's only 8 more thrifty 250s to go, and we're there. And that will put us largely on track for where we need to be at this point in the calendar. So thank you very, very kindly. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, the reason why we do that in Tennessee is because we don't want people developing. Because if we develop, we can't control them.
Well, that's right, David from Maine. Absolutely. But by the same token, you know, there's a whole lot of really intelligent and stirringly creative people in the state of Tennessee. And stories like this must come out, and they just go, oh, Jesus, not again.
I think it has to do with the fact that it's the ugly nature of politics. When you're in an area of the South and when you're in an area that is... there's a depressed economy in a lot of places. Best thing to do, so people don't start getting restless and start thinking in their brains, is just create a distraction, and a social distraction.
Well, I mean, consider what a contradiction in terms this is for the right to lifers. Now they don't love them babies unless they're babies what's made inside a marriage that's preferably between two white peoples.
Contradictions require critical thinking now.
Sorry, that's in short supply.
there's none of that. There's no debate. You know, you look at what...
Zeke, I need 2 pounds of critical thinking there. Well, I'm sorry, Marveline. We ain't had none of that for quite some time. Used to keep it right back there behind the licorice ropes, and yeah, see, the dust is already settled.
You look at how the media covered this dog debacle, this nonsense, this fact that someone is 8 years old in Indonesia, and even having to justify any of this is just another sign of the crumbling of our whole entire mediapolis, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, but by the same token, go ahead and lay out the specifics, please, or the particulars of same.
The particulars of the story?
Yeah, just so everybody's in on where you're going.
Oh, okay. Well, this is regarding the comment of kind of like the retaliation to Romney putting his dog on the roof. They decided to dig up an old quote from Obama's book about trying dog when he was a child. And, you know, that's obviously the angle of the reference of a subhuman, a foreigner. I can't believe he would do that. And then just letting the media run with it completely. And having, and obviously it's working because I was going to comment section after comment section. and on stories that have nothing to do with politics, Bob. And you know what the comment?
At Obama, he done at him some dog. How about them? Yeah, War Eagle.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at a story about the on the radar they were tracking what they appeared to be a serpent in Loch Ness, and at the bottom of the comment, some person.
Yeah, you use the term loosely.
Yeah, some person. And he just said, well, I'll tell you what it was. That was Obama's dog. He was going in the water. It had nothing to do with anything. It's like, I mean, that's how easy it is to inject it in the public.
Right, but then he writes back to his handler at the RNC or World Nut Day, Wing Nut Daily or whatever, and says, see, and I'm spreading the message.
I think there's some of that, but I think a lot of it is just, it's that subliminal conversation or subliminal bumper stickers. That's what it is. Just get people talking about nonsense.
But by the same token, how subliminal is it? And this is the different version of the same thing.
Right.
You know my Senator Blanche Manchin?
Right.
Because he's Blanche Lincoln with better hair?
Right.
He's running for his very own 6-year Senate term this year. Because so far he hadn't had his own Senate term. He's just been warming the seat that was left when Robert Byrd went on to his long home. Well, he wants everybody to know back home here in West by God that he ain't in the tank for that there one what's living in our White House. Yeah, no kidding. CNN reporting earlier today, and I guess it's making the rounds now. I think TPM's writing about it. That Joe said, right now in West Virginia, these first 3.5 years haven't been that good to West Virginia, he said of the Obama presidency this week, according to a report in National Journal. So then you look at what the options will be. Who will be on the other end? The funny thing is, employment in the coal industry is up, not down, in West Virginia under Barack Obama. It really is. But, you know, Blanche Manchin needs for people to understand it. You know, he's not going to bow and scrape to that Negro. Because remember, it was only 4 short years ago, about this time of year, when 23% of the people in West Virginia who voted... Now, we're not counting the Republicans here, David. These are the Democrats who voted in the Democratic primary. 23% of them said, yeah, I couldn't vote for that one because I don't think America's ready for a Negro Muslim in the White House. And I ain't sure he's aborned here, neither. It gives me no joy to talk about my state that way, but 23% of the people that Joe Manchin wants voting for him said that.
It's so easy to stir up racism in this country and it's so easy because we let people get away with it so often.
Well, for the love of God, I mean, now I'm not out here crying for pity or anything,
right?
But you know, let's have a little sympathy here. This is what I'm dealing with on my ballot in November. Joe Manchin, who wants to make sure that everybody understands he ain't necessarily going to vote for that Negro. Or John Racy, who thinks that it's just like going to Auschwitz to not be able to smoke in one of his crappy buildings. That's my choice. That really is. No kidding. That is my choice in November for Senator of the United States of America from West Virginia. A guy who thinks that not being able to blow smoke around the table at dinner time is just like being sent to the ovens in the death camps, or a guy who wants West Virginia to know that he is, well, these 3 years that we've had more employment in the coal industry than any other time in recent memory, these ain't necessarily been the best years for West Virginia, you know, because, you know, that one's in our White House. That's my choice.
kind of makes you want to stay home, doesn't it?
I mean, with that choice, you don't really have to tell who you voted for. I mean, I wouldn't...
I don't know. Maybe there'll be some Mountain Party candidate on there, in which case I'll vote that. Otherwise, you know, I'm voting none of the above. I'll go out and vote because there's a couple of people need voting for, but it ain't neither one of those two. And you know what? It might be a close race. But as far as I can tell, in light of the fact that Joe Manchin likes to go out and form bipartisan support bills with people teabagging freaks like Marco Rubio, and in light of the fact that both he and John Racey are in a mad race to see which one can get their proboscis further up the hind end of the coal industry, I got no choice. I mean, do you see a way out, David?
No, I don't. I mean, a lot of people in that situation, that's a head scratcher on that one. I really wouldn't know what to suggest other than none of the above. The Mountain Party, just run to the other party, and have people understand. It's like, I got to do it in this case.
And the Mountain Party, the Mountain Party doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell, even if they're mounting a candidate, and I don't even know if they are.
Right, it's more than just principle. It's your life, it's your culture, it's your history. It's all of that, and when it all ties together like that, you have to do what is completely right for yourself inside. So, yeah, I'm completely on the same page with you, which kind of puts it in an awkward position, because then you look at who's running all across state to state, and there are so many times where people are put in that predicament as well. But the only thing I would say to that is that psychologically, most people are either going to pull the D or the R. So I guess what I was saying, if people think they need to vote for principle and have that psychological problem, like, oh, I don't know if I should or shouldn't. I mean, just understand the basic law of psychology. I mean, when fear is placed in there far enough into the psyche, it's always just going to be Democrat or Republican. As far as the saturation of the media is concerned, I mean, that's our only choices.
I don't know what it would feel like, David. Honest to God, I don't. I don't know what it would feel like to be able to excitedly go to my polling place and have a candidate that I really, really cared about and really believed in. How cool must it be to be a progressive in Vermont and get to go and vote for Bernie Sanders?
I'd say it's pretty cool.
You know, had I lived in that district in Ohio, I would have busted my ass every day of the week trying to get people to the polls for Dennis Kucinich. I mean, and there are others. There are other places where other decent human beings represent constituencies, and you just go, oh, God, it must be nice.
I'm in the same boat with you, Bob, because, you know, when you talk of governors and senators, I mean, we've been trying for years to get Collins and Snow, and now we have LePage, which I don't even understand how that guy got in.
Oh, he's a loon.
Pretty much, I think it has to do with conditioning that voting it's not worth it. Each party is the same. That kind of mentality, which I think pretty much played in the Tea Party's favor and from state to state. And you see how progressively, no pun intended, progressively or worse it got, having those Tea Party teabaggers, whatever, those types of rogues in the Republican Party and in government and in local government, not to mention. And that to me is the most troubling aspect of it, because I don't think there needs to be like I was saying before, I mentioned this before, there needs to be like a simulation game on government where someone experienced Sims needs to come up with it. So people can see what happens when you don't vote for your worldview, for your livelihood, for your culture, for your community, And see what happens when you just...
Well, see, now what I would like to see in a Sims kind of game setting is to watch what happens when a bunch of morons take over the political discussion. You know, you've got your little Sims political universe going on, and the next thing you know, these other little Sim creatures walk in with badly spelled signs and threats to bring to take guns after people, and then I guess you'd have to have Sims media, and the Sims media would all cover the idiots instead of the people trying to do serious things. And then you could watch the whole Sims political universe just descend into either thermodynamic inertia or chaos or whatever the hell it turns out to be, and just watch your whole little Sims game go to hell in a handbasket. And the only problem is they'll never do anything like that, David, because it all ends the same way.
Right.
It's impossible to win.
Yeah. But you know, it's I think the best answer for why people who are just constantly on the fence or veering toward the fence of not voting and not getting involved in the process, you're going to accelerate the rate of sabotage, destruction, corruption. And once you do that, you can't turn back the speed like you would want to. So that, to me, is why it's important to slow down that acceleration. You're here, and yes, it always can get worse. And that's, and you know, so many people think that, well, if I don't get involved in the process, and I don't, and my family doesn't get involved in this, or I'm not aware of these issues, and they're not aware of that, it adds up after a while. And that's why a lot of places we have so much red in this country. Yeah, I understand a lot of people. You know, here's the thing, Bob. This is the thing that people need to understand. Being a progressive and being a liberal, you make a bucket list of 200 things or 300, 400, whatever the number is. But people need to understand, listening, Bob, that we'll be lucky to get two on that list, maybe one.
Yeah.
That's seen as a victory. We'll be lucky in that sense because that's what we're dealing with in this country. That many morons, that much of an idiocracy. It's that constant pushback. It's that constant, nope, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. Teachers, are you kidding me? Teachers. And that's what we're dealing with. So I guess what I'm saying is it's going to be more disappointment than probably we can imagine when we vote for our conscience, but there's that little tiny, tiny nano sliver that keeps us going.
Yeah, hoping to get something good done.
And before I go, I did want to mention, I wanted to get this ball rolling, and it is, I think it is late April, and that could only mean one thing, Bob, and that means... We're going to do a new contribution gift today, and hopefully we can get someone interested in it. And I just want to tell you a little bit about it to anyone who wants to contribute it. It is, since we do talk about food on this network a bit, I think it's only natural that we give the lucky recipient a food basket that he can be proud to have.
Oh, or she.
Or she, right. Excuse me for that. So this is going to be for, I'm sorry, but it's, I've selected this one, not vegetarians, this time, maybe next time. So if you are a vegetarian or you're just into fruit or any of that nature, or vegan or so forth, we'll have another one for you. So this is for the, I guess you could say the meat lovers.
Oh, the omnivores.
Yes, the omnivores. Yeah, there you go. So this basket includes sopressata, pork salami that is characterized by a hearty flavor, 9 ounces, prosciutto, 1 ounce, provolone dolce, Monte Veronese, some Crotonese, sheep's milk cheese.
Oh!
Water crackers, zucchini tapenade, mixed Greek olives, mini toasts, a signature cheese serving knife.
Did I mention that I missed dinner? I don't eat before the show. This is brutal.
Oh no, this is torture for you. Then I'm sorry to do this, but hopefully someone will be really into getting this. And bamboo cutting board. And it all comes together in an oval wooden box, and this is a grand total of 6 pounds of stuff.
Whoa!
So you get 6 pounds of food. Let's put it on this number. Any contribution, the first contribution of $50 is going to walk away with this basket in your hands, and you can go eat it in the closet at once, or share with your family. Preferably.
Share.
and all I require you is
No. If that was me, David, I'd grab that damn thing, I'd slip the shrink wrap, I'd chop up my cholesterol medication on a mirror and snort it.
Well,
and just jump.
Well, I'll tell you what. So anyone who's interested in this basket, I'll send Bob the details. And if he hasn't had anyone do a contribution for it today, we'll try it again Monday. But somebody's getting it. So $50, a generous contribution. We'll get you this basket, and it is still worth over the value of that. So I think that's a pretty good deal. And if you're into food, I would jump on it. So if you're listening right now, I wouldn't wait, because You never know who's going to jump on it before you. So get those contributions going to bobkincaid@gmail.com.
Or you can simply use the button at headonradionetwork.com.
Yes, at headonradionetwork.com. And you too can have a food basket that should give you lots and lots of enjoyment. Bon appetit, everyone.
Oh, yes.
And oh,
see,
yeah.
See, I have a profound weakness for Soprasetta.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, it's pitiful. I'm powerless over it.
Well, that's good to know, because if there are any people who want to bribe Mr. Kincaid, send your pork salami in now.
Oh, merciful soul.
Except the clean.
Is there any mortadella in there too?
I don't think so. No, not in this basket.
No, that's the devilish duo, the mortadella and the soprasetta.
There's only so much you can put in the food basket. That's the problem. You can't have an infinite food basket. If only you could, like Santa Claus's bag of toys.
Okay, I think we have a winner.
Oh, well, congratulations to you. And your basket should be on its way as soon as you get your address to Bob, and I will mail this out as fast as I can. And I know that Jug of Punch probably got his...
Yes, he did, and is loving it.
That's good. That's what I like to hear, Bob. And for anyone who missed it, here's my suggestion to you. Every month, we're going to have a different contribution gift. It's going to be great, and you're going to love it. And if you don't love it and you hear about it, I'm always going to tell you what it is beforehand, so you can decide if you're going to bite or you're not going to bite. I think that's completely fair in that aspect, and so many people will be able to get a chance, because we all have preferences, we all have tastes, and it's something for everybody. That's the way I look at it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, this is nothing short of delicious.
Well, you know, I hope everybody continues to contribute and keep this wonderful community that we have going on. And, oh, yeah, one last thing. The Bob Marley documentary is starting in theaters today.
No kidding. Cool.
And I hear it's pretty good. And so you may want to look out for that. So now I leave it up to the next caller.
Brilliantly done, David. Brilliantly done. Thank you very much.
All right. Good evening, Bob.
All right. Take care, David.
Later.
Bye now. David from Maine, pop culture correspondent and the spontaneous distributor of what are the people who have, you know, who really do this spontaneous premium distributor. Photos of the food porn would be nice. It would be very much enjoyed. Let's see. It's about 10 past the hour, and I'm gonna have to go and take some sort of appetite suppressant or something like that. Woof. Oh, that just salt rosetta. Oh God, yummy. So, yeah, we'll be okay. We're going to try. I think I'm a little distracted. So we will take a little break and come back. And your calls, of course, are welcome. I'm totally distracted. I am. I'm distracted. I'm food mesmerized. That was brilliant, David. We'll take a break and come back. And your calls. It is Friday on the Front Porch. Do not wait until 10 minutes before showtime. You know what? I need to get in on this. Do it now, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID, @gmail.com. A little something, I think it's an instrumental. Ayana's Succotash. This is the horn.
your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour, and something really kind of cool happened. We had two people, I mean, they hit bang bang on the magic basket, and I have written to David to see if we can do something to make that happen for both folks. One is already taken care of, and I'm working on the other one, because that's just too cool, and I think we hit a nerve. Michael writing and saying, I hope that was mine. I was just thinking about grilled onions, mustard, and Polish sausage when he called. Have a great weekend. P.S. Mike says, I missed what the loon said to your wife. Well, I didn't mention that part. That's sort of beyond the... that's just too much. But the reply was terrific for many an occasion. I am gleefully, joyfully wedded to a beautiful woman. But you do not want to be on the downhill side of her temper. And I mean, the minute she started telling me the story, I really did. I heard the soundtrack music from Mortal Kombat. Get over here. I heard that. It happened. Finish her. And the best part of it all was seeing her. She had been so pissed off. Honey, I think there's something wrong with it. No, that was it. Honey, that was a totally appropriate response. But to make her laugh by the end of it was the best part of all. That's when I got the kiss. Jesus, we ran right past the hand-holding. What's become of us? Dr. John writing in, yes, infinite food basket. Yes, like a bag of holding, but with sausages. Gary Gygax, R.I.P., indeed. Flying my geek flag, this is John. A bag of sausage holding. Now, we'll get this all sorted out, and I think it's going to be a very, very happy thing. Because now we have people battling to give the premium to the other person. No, we're going to try to make it happen for you both. Because it's just a brilliant idea, and as was noted in the chat room, David from Maine is an absolute master at this. I mentioned a little bit ago that there's a new game out. It's I think we'll call it the Hanky Janky. You know, the hokey pokey. What if that really is what it's all about? This is a Roman Catholic bishop by the name of Daniel Jenke. And he gave a homily last Saturday in which he said the following. Based upon the current government's threatened infringement upon the church's religious exercise of its ministry, No. I'm sorry, Mr. Bishop. No cheating. No. We're not going to let you. No. Any more than we'd let Ted Nugent. I wonder how Bishop Jenke and Ted Nugent would get along. Because what he said, you know, I mentioned last night on the program, and bang, there it is again. These right-wingers cannot resist comparing anything they don't like to Hitler. No, he's probably... It's probably not a new game, the hinky-jinky. You do the hinky-jinky and you turn the kid around. Probably not a new game at all. He's probably been playing it for years. But
you know, I don't want to read the quote. I want you to hear this man of God spew his poisonous antichrist venom.
For 2,000 years, the enemies of Christ have certainly tried their best. But think about it. The church survived and even flourished centuries of terrible persecution during the days of the Roman Empire. The church survived barbarian invasions. The church survived wave after wave of jihads. The church survived the...
Bishop Hanky Janky? The church started the Crusades. Shh. I don't want to... No, it did not survive centuries of jihads. The church, as anyone who can tell you who happens to be even within 100 feet of a history of that era, the church, the Christians, the people who follow the Prince of Peace, were bought off and paid to go and slaughter people living in their own homelands. You filthy apologist for war, mayhem, and murder, you. That's not the color of the blood of Christ on your robe, Buster. That's the color of the blood of innocent men, women, and children cut down by sword-wielding mercenaries known as crusaders who were promised a break in the afterlife if they would just go and kill some brown people for Jesus. It really, really happened. The Pope gave a speech that is... We don't have the text of it, but we have the description of it. Where was it? Was it Jim, you'll know. Was it in Clermont, France, where it was first, where the first crusade was announced, and all the dispensations that went with it? Yeah, and how does he describe the church? The church has what?
During the days of the Roman Empire, the church survived barbarian invasions. The church survived wave after wave of jihads. The church survived the age of revolution. The church survived Nazism and communism.
The church survived Nazism? The church was complicit in Nazism! Holy mackerel! I guess Bishop Hanky Janky doesn't realize that a man who became Pope got himself in terrible trouble before he did so by pointing out the fact that Adolf Hitler had never been excommunicated. And still hasn't. Still hasn't.
And in the power of the resurrection, the church will survive the hatred of Hollywood, the malice of the media, the mendacious wickedness of the abortion industry.
Wait a minute. You know, he sounds extra super duper official and godly and stuff because he's got a shitload of reverb back there. Let me see if I can get on the same plane here. No, I don't want to get on anything with him. But let me see if I can make it sound a little bit more official by cranking a little bit of that cathedral reverb into my voice. Are we reaching Bishop Hanky Janky? Just check it. Now, he says the church has survived this and that and the hatred of Hollywood and the malice of the media and the horrors of abortion. And I don't know if he's done with his list or not, so I'll turn the reverb off for a second. And we'll see if he mentions the one other little thing that comes to mind. Okay?
The church will survive the entrenched corruption and sheer incompetence of our Illinois state government, and even the calculated disdain of the President of the United States, his bureaucrats in HHS, and the majority in today's federal Senate. May God have mercy. May God have mercy, especially on the souls of those politicians who pretend to be Catholic in church, but in their public lives, rather like Judas Iscariot, betray Jesus by how they vote and how they willingly cooperate with intrinsic evil.
Why, you filthy little fucker. That whole laundry list of made-up persecutions. And he never... I don't know. Maybe this is one of those moments where the god of irony was working his jaws like he was some sort of sick puppet. But did you notice he missed one of those things on that list of things the church will survive? Oh, the church will survive Hollywood and the liberals and the abortions. And what did he call it? The calculated disdain of the President of the United States. Hey, Bishop Hanky Janky! Where's that line about how the church will survive its priests' predilection for sticking their things up the tuchuses of little boys, Bishop? You filthy monster. To have the nerve to criticize a president for upholding his oath to the Constitution, which prevents him from enshrining any religious dogma in law, while you remain silent about the single most heinous, disgusting, revolting betrayal of which the church has lately been the principal perpetrator. You smarmily saying, may God have mercy on some politician's soul. I want nothing to do with your filthy, blood-soaked God, Bishop. For you are a servant of the devil and all his angels. And you suborn rape. And you suborn the theft of childhoods uncountable. And I will not pray God's mercy on your soul, you sorry bastard. You rewrite history to suggest that somehow Muslim people started the war that your own church began. And you try to rewrite the present to pretend that you are somehow persecuted simply because you and your child-raping religion are not allowed to foist your sick beliefs on those of us who have high enough morals to survive without them. Damn you. We, all of us, decent people, we damn you. How's it feel, Bishop? More than one can play at the reverb game.
As Christians, we must love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us. But as Christians, we must also stand up for what we believe. And
he hasn't been persecuted a damn dime's worth. You can tell in the photograph that he's certainly never been persecuted away from the goddamn dinner table. But not being able to enact a theocracy in a secular republic constitutes persecution in his weird and twisted and otherwise psychopathic mind. At the same time that he doesn't even bother to mention the fact that he is the head of a group of priests who most surely have among their number people who like to sexually molest innocent children. Gonna be kind of hot where you're going, Bishop. Gonna be a mite toasty. Yes, indeedy. But we still haven't gotten to the fun part with all his reverb.
Be ready to fight to defend our faith.
You know, it never ends well when some highfalutin, dress-wearing, uber-pious, hypocritical freak starts talking about fighting to defend freedom. That's how you got the Crusades! Oh, yeah, we'll make sure the Virgin Mary gives you a blowjob if you'll just go and kill some brown people. Yeah.
The days in which we live now require heroic Catholicism, not casual Catholicism. We can no longer be Catholics by accident, but instead be Catholics by conviction. In our own families, in our parishes, where we live and where we work, like that very first apostolic generation, we must be bold witnesses to the Lordship of Jesus Christ.
Like that very first Christian generation, is it okay if we slap the living shit out of anybody who tries to be a bold witness for this filthy this filthy bunch of theocrats? Can two play in this little swimming pool, Bishop Jenky?
We must be a fearless army of Catholic men ready to give everything we have.
Oh, just men. No women folk. Yeah, because see, the church jumped all over the women folk a couple of days ago, yesterday, maybe the day before. The Vatican decided to put the slap down on some nuns who had dared to suggest that it might be good if more people could go to the doctor when they were sick, and just turned out to be silent on the issue of whether or not women should be able to control women's bodies instead of corpulent pus-filled old bastards like these bishops. Even within the sick and twisted confines of the Roman Catholic Church as we know it, the women are still the ones who are the smarter. Even as clamped down, tamped down, locked down, stamped down as a Roman Catholic woman is, these nuns have proven that they have more integrity in their toenail clippings than an entire army of Bishop Jinkies. But by the way, we still haven't gotten where we're going.
For the Lord who gave everything for our salvation. Remember that in past history, other governments have tried to force Christians to huddle and hide only within the confines of their churches.
Uh-oh. Here we go. They can't resist it. It's just like a dog returning to his vomit.
Like those first disciples before the resurrection, locked together in the upper room.
Yeah, by the way, those first disciples who were locked together in the upper room, bunch of damn cowards, who was it that happened to notice, if you buy into the mythology, who was it that happened to notice that Jesus was no longer in the tomb? Was it Peter? No, it wasn't Peter. James? No, not James. John, son of Zeke, son of Jubilee? Or, Twern't none of the men folk. They were huddled up in that upper room, locked down, shitting themselves. It was the women folk who walked out where the people with the swords were and went to the tomb and were told, "He is not here." Just saying. But anyway, this ain't going anywhere you're going to like.
In the late 19th century, Bismarck waged his Kulturkampf, a culture war, against the Roman Catholic Church, closing down every Catholic school and hospital, convent and monastery in Imperial Germany. Clemenceau, nicknamed the Priest Eater, tried to do the same thing in France in the first decades of the 20th century.
Decades? Decades? Yes.
Hitler and Stalin.
Oh, there it is!
Their better moments would just...
At their better moments. Hitler and Stalin had better moments, according to Bishop Jenke. Hitler loved dogs. Maybe Bishop Jenke likes dogs.
Barely tolerate some churches remaining open, but would not tolerate any competition with the state in education, social services, and health care.
Gee, I wonder why it is then that the Pope was complicit in having several lots of Jews rounded up and sent off to their deaths. But when you know history, it's inconvenient if you're just trying to be an ideologue for your own sick and twisted political ends when they have nothing to do with spirituality or the good of the so-called flock.
In clear violation of our First Amendment rights, President Obama, with his radical pro-abortion and extreme secularist agenda, now seems intent on following a similar path.
You mean a similar path to Hitler and Stalin there, Bishop? Yeah, he done it. He done it. You know, complete with the reverb. He done it. But he's trying to weasel out. Trying to weenie away.
Bishop Jenke gave several examples of times in history in which religious groups were persecuted because of what they believed.
Said Patricia Gibson, Chancellor of the Peoria Diocese.
Now, we certainly have not reached the same level of persecution. However, history teaches us to be cautious once we start down the path of limiting religious liberty. And, you know, limiting religious liberty is the same thing as telling religions that they can't cram their own goddamn beliefs down people who don't want to participate. Yeah, we're being persecuted because... You know, we're not. They took our stakes away and our matches.
He is a servant of the Prince of Lies. Ron and Raleigh. Bob. Once again, you have taken one of God's chosen vicars out of context. No, says Dr. John. Sorry, Obama isn't Bismarck, Hitler, or Stalin. This guy's dumbass radicalism is trumped only by his historical ignorance. And see, that's what I was saying with David from Maine about, if The Sims did politics. You'd be sitting there trying to put your political system together, and in would come some pederastic, dress-wearing the bishop and make everything fall apart. Because, you see, the church has to have agony in order to survive, because the church is in its entirety founded not upon love, but upon murder. They revere and have adulation for the murder of one Palestinian day-laboring itinerant rabbi. And then they ran around for the next four centuries trying to get trying to needle the Roman government into doing the same to them. When when that wasn't even the intent of Paul. He's writing his letters, all that business about slaves obeying your masters and everything that the Southerner preachers like to use as an excuse to justify African slavery. That was written, that's in those Pauline letters because he was trying to sort of telegraph, as it were, to the authorities at Rome that Christianity was not a threat to the civil structure. It's only later when the people who are in love with suffering and blood and misery and agony and death catapult to a sort of stardom that everything it just goes to hell. Jenny, which part? Can you tell us again who said that? Clarify that, and I'll be happy to try to sort that out. Jim noting that he says research indicates that 3,000 Christian pilgrims were slain, giving impetus to the First Crusade. I have never heard that part. But it certainly wasn't a matter of defending European shores against, what did he call it, waves upon waves of jihads. One definition of the First Crusade says that it was a military expedition by Roman Catholic Europe to regain the Holy Lands taken in the Muslim conquests of the Levant between 632 and 661, ultimately resulting in the recapture of Jerusalem in 1099. Launched by Pope Urban II on November 27, 1095, as a result of a response to an appeal from Byzantine Emperor Alexius I Comnenus, who was under invasion by the Seljuk Turks and then retaking the holy, so-called Holy Land, went from secondary to primary in importance. Of course, once they retook Jerusalem, the Crusaders refused to give it back to the people who thought it was their rightful owner, they were the rightful owners, to wit, the Byzantine Empire. Nine Crusades. Seems to me that would be the wave after wave part of the process. Jim noting that Pius XI did issue an encyclical, is regret of treatment of Christians by Hitler, a statement of regret of the concordat with the Third Reich. That sometimes I realize that there's a problem in noting what's not there. Treatment of Christians by Hitler, but not the treatment of, you know, Jews. By the way, I am informed by David from Maine that we do, in fact, have two lucky winners in this case. So you will both be receiving your basket, and it will be necessary that we get food porn from both of you. Just say it. So let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, so I thought it was interesting that the Marines have brought back the sort of crusade symbol, their insignia. It's like...
Say what?
The crusade. It's it looks like a Templar, Knights Templar type, coat of armor thing. I'm just like, oh my God. So yeah, they replaced the Wolverine thing with this cross type insignia.
Oh no.
I know. It's too much. It's just kind of like, they wear that while they're murdering Afghanistan people, and I guess when they go to Iran, they get to wear that. You know, it's just, I don't know. I just thought it was a bit off.
So that, have they readopted the cross of St. James or something? Oh, yuck.
Yeah, well, it's It's the Red Cross of the medieval Knights Templar. And there's some...
They're admitting that?
Yeah, I mean, that's what the cross looks like. I'm just looking at it now. It's just kind of... It was on the... MSNBC.
You know, they do have some long transgenerational memories over there. There might be some folks who know what that cross means in, say, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan.
Yeah, anyway. Well, did you hear about this quote that Jimmy Carter said?
No, what?
He said, the truth is that male religious leaders have had and still have an option to interpret holy teachings either to exalt or subjugate women. They have, for their own selfish ends, overwhelmingly chosen the latter. Their continual choice provides the foundation or justification for much of the pervasion, persecution, and abuse of women throughout the world. You know, Jimmy Carter is, like, on it. I'm like, good Lord. I mean, this is what you get to do when you're retired. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and you decide to do something with your retirement besides going to Japan and vomiting on prime ministers. Oh, my God, the patch just came up. That's the Templar cross.
Right, so anyway, yeah, so that's a bit special.
And the name of the Fighter Attack Squadron 122 is now Crusaders.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I just sort of glanced at it. I didn't get all. Yeah. Okay. That's so. It is quite over the top, right?
Way over.
Yeah.
Mikey Weinstein, bless his heart, who runs the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, is. Not exactly happy, and he rightfully noted, he said, I don't know that the Marine Corps could do anything more to fuel the cause of jihad. It will directly end up taking lives and maiming members of our military.
Yeah. You know. And, I mean, once again, they're all doing it to protect the women folk, as we go back to Jimmy Carter's little lovely quote.
Oh, my God.
You know, it's pretty sick. But the other thing I wanted to mention was, you know, as an example of just how much the health care is just deteriorating in this country. Did you realize that the death from pregnancy and childbirth has doubled in the past 20 years? It's gone from 6.6 per 100,000 live births in 1987 to 13 in 2006. Now, I mean, what, you know, there's no way that those sort of statistics should be going backwards unless you're gripped by this profit-taking, murderous system that is killing so many people. I mean, just sort of, I mean, it's outrageous. That statistic just did my head in. I'm like, well, you can't even have a baby in this country now, safely, you know, for a lot of people.
No, and meanwhile, that just paints in stark relief the numbers coming out of, say, you know, Cuba.
Well, anyway.
Where they are dramatically lower, as is infant mortality.
Well, we dropped women in 40 other countries are better off, basically.
So here in America, are you suggesting, Sandra, that we get to chant, we're 41, we're 41?
Yeah, well, I just think, you know, it's just some massive numbers of people who are being tossed by the wayside in every industry in this country. And, you know, those sort of things have a way of, like, accelerating. It doesn't, you know, it's not going to get any better unless there's a solution, you know, to the healthcare situation here. I don't, you know, that number is disgusting. You know, along with their, if you have a baby now, you know, bet on some sort of C-section, which is, you know, not exactly a good way to give birth either, you know?
No.
I mean, in fact, that should be the exception, but it's becoming the norm because somebody needs to get paid. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And it's just like, it's just gruesome. Anyway, I don't know. And the other story that really boggles the mind is, like, Monsanto's is, you know, coming under a lot of fire. Their corn, that hideous corn, is now being associated with the bees dying. So guess what they do? They buy
Yes.
the leading bee research firm. Now, companies don't buy anything like that unless they want to squash. Monsanto's is, you know, it's like almost a cliche. They are just a horror.
Oh, they're the massy energy of food.
No, but it's just, I read that and I thought, oh my God. You know, because I guess the drumbeat is getting louder about, you know, their destruction of the environment with all their Frankenfoods and their machinations with the environment and forcing farmers to take their seeds and the Roundup that just keeps getting more toxic by the year. And they just sort of buy off governments because they've bought off the Obama administration. It's amazing. If you go up and down the USDA, it's packed full of people associated with Monsanto in one way or another. It's disgusting.
Yeah, the very mission, the name of the company was Biologic. Cute,
right.
Huh?
Right.
Yeah,
yep.
And their mission statement said that their very the very reason for being was to discover the cause of colony collapse disorder. And of course, now we know that Monsanto had a big hand in it. So they bought the company in September 2001, and there went any discussion of Monsanto killing the bees. This is ridiculous.
Well, the thing is, though, I don't really care. It's like, well, you're not, you know, if you're killing off all the bees, buying up something is not going to solve the problem because Monsanto's be damned. They're not going to survive not having any more damn bees. You see what I'm saying? It's like the sort of cannibalistic nature of it all is well disturbing. Like, oh, if we have to destroy the whole world, we're going to get paid. And it's just irrational, and it's just bizarre. I mean, I suppose you have to sort of disconnect in order to participate in these schemes because we all need bees, last I heard.
Hard to get along without them.
And buying up some company to shut them down isn't going to, you know, change that fact. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, suing, you know, I suppose what it does, it keeps Monsanto from being destroyed, which I hate to use that kind of language, but this is where we're at. I mean, that company needs to be destroyed. It needs to go away.
Once and for all, yeah. Because, you know, remember the woman I talked about last night, the one who won the South American portion of the Goldman Prize, was a woman from Argentina whose baby was poisoned to death by Monsanto. Her baby lived 3 days before the kidney failure kicked in and it died.
Right.
Because she, as a mother, had breathed persistent daily sprayings of Roundup over massive soybean fields.
They're just a really scary company.
Well, and it ties in too, Sandra, with, you know, I go back to that conversation I was so thrilled to have with Charles C. Mann regarding his magnificent book, 1493. The origins of globalization lie in, you know, the Columbian Exchange, so that now, where before, for instance, where we're talking about bees, there were the honeybee, as we know it, did not exist in the Western Hemisphere. It was brought from Europe. So all of their pollination, all of their food crops, happened some other way, some other bug, or the wind itself. But now, because the entire world has cross-pollinated, and because everything is reliant on bee culture, we've set ourselves up for a food disaster. And these people, you know, in the Frankenstein movies, there's all the peasants with their pitchforks and their torches marching on the castle by night. You know. But no, we don't do that. Because thou shalt not touch the corporate profits, right? And they can be allowed to create massive worldwide famine and then they'll profit by that because they'll speculate on the futures of what's left over.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's just, you know, and that's, you know, it's just stunning to look at how these MNCs operate, you know. I mean, they're just so pernicious. With that in mind, can we get a high five for Miss, I don't know, Kirchner, or whatever her name is in Argentina. She's like, in the meanwhile, I'm about to nationalize this oil company. And Spain, what the fuck you gonna do about it? Nothing. And, you know, the...
Gonna send an armada?
The Western media is freaking out, you know, but she is, turning out to be totally, populist, nationalizing resources. She said she's the president of Argentina. She's not a hoodlum, but she has to do what's best for people of Argentina. Anyway, it's a fantastic story. It's hilarious because Spain is threatening this, that, or another, but the reality is that, you know, they can't really do nothing. So, you know, it's some pushback, and a lot of it is coming from Latin America. I mean, they are, like, so done with neoliberalism. It's stunning to watch them kind of, you know, get themselves out of it one way or the other. But that was just the latest. And if you think about what I said about Argentina and the Falklands, you know, it's interesting kind of, you know, if they want to nationalize their resources. You know what I mean? Because, you know, Venezuela already said, oh, we're more than happy to provide the expertise if you need it. So they're going to hurry up and kill off what's-his-face. I know he ain't long for this world. So I do wonder what's happening in Venezuela after he goes.
Oh, you can bet that the nobody's wondering, you know, in the bowels of the CIA.
Well, yeah, I know, but I thought that whole summit, you know, the prostitute thing notwithstanding, I mean, who gives a F about that? But, you know, Obama, you know, the sort of Cuba stuff ain't resonating. People are like, yeah, we're done with that now, you know.
The other thing is that the South American nations realize that they are no longer necessarily joined at the economic hip to the United States. I mean, look at the relationship between Brazil and China.
Yeah, and Brazil and Iran and Brazil and India and Brazil and Russia and on and on and on. I mean, it just that summit, you know, you can just, I could just tell that the U.S. has really, lost its footing down there because
everything that we did heretofore, we did at the muzzle of a gun.
Yeah, no. I mean, you know, payback's a bitch. I mean, it's just interesting. And I was laughing when, you know, what was that report? Well, Obama is still sticking by the head of whatever CIA aspect. I'm thinking, well, what choice does he have? Shit.
Yeah, who else you got?
What are you going to do about it, you know? But anyway, so...
But God forbid the American people should look at anything that you and I just discussed, Sandra, because after all, we have to worry about whether some Secret Service people got hookers in a place where no one thinks twice about it.
Well, yeah. I don't, you know, I'm just like, oh, my God, is that the sex scandal that all the righties were waiting for in the White House? Well, then they are disappointed because...
Oh, I give it maybe three or four more honest-to-God during-the-week news cycles before, if it hasn't happened already, before somebody over at Wingnut Daily or... you know, the usual suspects, Free Republics. Well, you know, what they were going to do is they were going to bring one of them back for him.
Oh, right, yeah, no. I'm saying, I know they're going to try to milk something out of it, but I have to share this other little, you know, just stupid shit that, you know, I get up to when I'm just... Anyway, so that Glenn Greenwald did this tweet saying, he said, George Zimmerman's lawyer, smart, shrewd, and skilled... And, you know, I just rolled back, you know, I really expected. And he said, yeah, what's your point? That was my tweet. And he rolled back, well, the point is exactly what I said, that Zimmerman's lawyer is smart, shrewd, and skilled. That he's a very good lawyer. I'm like, damn, these people be tripping on Twitter.
Shit. What makes him, I mean...
Well, no, my point was like, well, I don't even, you know, George, you know, so what? You know, I mean, if Glenn Greenwald thinks that some people out here are expecting anything except for this racist killer to walk, he's tripping. So that's why I wrote, what's your point? You know?
Yeah, right, because because we all know what happened at the Emmett Till trial.
And not only that, but I almost wrote back, shit, I could represent him and he could get off. You know what I'm saying? I just thought, you know, anyway.
Right. This is not Atticus Finch and Tom Robinson.
No, I just thought it was funny that he jumped back and responded to me. I'm like, damn, these people be true.
Oh, but he's like that. He's like that,
okay,
Sandra. He's prickly like a porcupine or like a cactus.
No, I just thought you enjoyed that.
I do. I mean, he's just,
you know, because I was
silly.
I didn't participate. I thought, oh my god, you know, what the? And I just
Not going to be any skill involved in this. If this thing results in any, hell, the jury may demand the right to indict Trayvon Martin in death. That's a little broad, but I wouldn't. No, the guy's going to walk.
No, but I don't want to hear from some left-wing libertarian, liberal, whatever the hell these people are, you know, laying the groundwork for why some justice might be served for, you know what I mean? Trying to lay out a possibility that this can be anything but a circus. You see what I'm saying? It's going to be a circus. Don't tell me otherwise.
Oh, there'll be 24/7 coverage, Sandra.
Well, from Mr. Two-Tier Justice, I was just like, no way.
Yeah. I can wait, but sooner or later we'll see it once everything gets up and running real good, like, Nancy Grace guarantees and that kind of stuff. Ugh.
Yeah. Well, no, because, I mean, the only thing you got to remember...
And, you know, dude got a $150,000 bond today.
It's a joke. I know. I'm just like, well, it starts off. And also, just from the basis that some black folks have to go on TV pleading and begging for justice, that's the baseline right there.
And once again, because I can't help asking these questions, what would a black man similarly situated, what would his bond be? Think it'd be $150,000?
Well, exactly.
I don't think he'd be admitted to bond because here's the interesting factoid of the evening. In many states, if not most, you are not entitled to bond in cases of murder.
Well, no, but the thing is, it's like, unfortunately, you know, I was just not surprised, and I'm not going to be surprised by, you know, the outcome of this unless due to sentence or something. Then I'll be surprised.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, the default, if there's any kind of conviction, it'll be involuntary manslaughter. And if he doesn't make bond, he'll get time served and be back out in, back out in circulation, literally, at the end of the trial.
Right. And, didn't he, like, have the nerve to want to meet with the parents? I was like, oh my god, these people are really tripping.
And you know those early photographs of him that showed him as this sort of pudgy, maybe dark-skinned guy?
Yeah, he looked... Yeah,
he's looking real thin and white.
Yeah, you know.
With that skinhead haircut. That's not a prison do.
Well, you know, I don't even... It's just... To me, I'm more on the tip that it's just the blackness that is just being gunned down and murdered. You know what I mean? It's just the same old story over and over. I don't care how they try to spin, you know, whatever his nationality is. You know what I mean? He's not 6 feet under. I don't know. Anyway, that whole thing was, really bugging me. And I don't have anything rational to say about it. I just think it's like, you know, it's so indicative of what this country is all about. So it'll just move forward. And under the heading of the world needs to be securitized by the U.S., the European Parliament has adopted this bill giving the U.S. access to personal data for airline passengers who fly to the U.S. and anywhere around it.
Yeah, and under what... Under what pretense or pretext said that we just won't let any Europeans come to the United States if they don't?
No, the thing was that the U.S. would pull all visa-free flying, you know, because if you go back and forth, I think you can get 3 months if you fly from the EU or 6 months without any sort of visa. And because I know when I go to England, I 6 months without, any sort of concerns,
Yeah.
they were threatening that, you know, which is a pain in the ass, you know. But what's really disturbing is that they don't seem to be able to tell the Europeans how long they're going to keep the data, what they're going to do with the data. And I'm thinking to myself, well, we got the same damn...
Well, that's because they're just going to warehouse the data.
Well, like they have, you know, it's like, you know, wakey-wakey, that five-year that the Obama administration has said now that, you know, I mean, do people realize that the total awareness program is now law? Remember how everyone freaked out about that when the Bush administration just peeped up a little bit?
But yeah.
That's what this is now, this holding of data for 5 years and the endless data mining. So Poindexter, that weirdo, his program is actually been adopted by the Obama administration for all intents and purposes.
Jesus. And he was an evil bastard.
Oh, he was hideous. I was like, you know, they keep popping up. But, you know, now that's in the guise of Cass Sunstein, if you know about that character.
Oh, God, sadly. Well, he was the one who killed the particulate rule the first time through via the Office of Management and Budget.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, but he's a real case. He's the one that, you know...
Well, he's the one who will step in and provide the president the cover he needs in order to do corporate bidding.
Yeah, and he's the one...
Well, and there's another one out there. I don't know if you saw this. The New York Times had an op-ed about it earlier today, pointing out these new regulations that have been promulgated as a result of a court order by the EPA in regard to air pollution coming from fracking wells. And
yeah,
of course,
they postponed it, right?
Pardon?
Didn't they postpone it?
I didn't see that in the op-ed this morning, or if it was there, I missed it. But no, they were announced yesterday, and then the New York Times had the op-ed on it today. But I'll give you a dollar to a donut that Cass Sunstein is well, Mr. President, you know, this is going to be bad for the economy. Not poisoning people is bad, you know, that's bad for the economy, Mr. President. We need to do something. Maybe we can just delay this. Because, you know, a lot of this is exactly what we're working on with the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, because we're finding out more and more that the crap coming off, going up into the air and flying away into people's lives is pure murder. I mean, it's particulated murder.
Well, he's right in the thick of it, and, you know, I have a prediction that if Obama is elected to a second term and one of those nine-robed whoever's all over, son, watch.
Well, he's been on the short list forever,
yeah,
hasn't he?
I don't know, but I just... Has he?
He was mentioned as a potential nominee for the other two that went in.
Well, he's just, I mean, to me, he's
Kagan and Sotomayor.
Yeah, well, he's a bit scary with his papers on pre-crime type of discussions. I just think he's a real frightening character, and he's deep into the Obama administration.
Oh, he is much beloved. Since it is Friday, though, and this is something that you and I have talked about at some length, did you see the new quote out from Jebby?
Oh no! What's the latest? I've been so the presidential stuff is so tedious. Well, what's this one?
Well, there was an article the other day talking about all the people who have said they, you know, I don't know, I'm just too big. The governor of New Mexico and some other thing. I'm too busy to be vice president. You know, Chris Christie, you can count on me being governor here on January 1st, 2013. Well, so those are the... So,
is it time for a heart attack, stroke? Shit. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, this... But, you know, as Malloy pointed out, the Bush family doesn't do anything without a VIG. You know, without some dollars crossing paths. And, of course, they recently endorsed Willard Romney. So Jebby gave an interview to Newsmax, you know, that outfit.
That's not even, yeah, okay.
Yeah. He said Marco Rubio is probably the best choice to share the ticket with Romney. But he also said he'd He said, well, but I'd consider running as vice president if Romney asked me.
No way. Really?
Way.
Well, listen, the thing about Rubio that's a bit problematic, isn't he a Mormon?
Is he? I don't think so. What?
I don't know. I just, for some reason, that just popped in my mind. I remember vaguely seeing it somewhere, but maybe I'm wrong, and maybe somebody in the family can clarify. I just for some reason, I just vaguely remember seeing that somewhere. But
isn't that just icky? Just putting it, I'd run if he asked me. Yeah, I bet you would, Jeb. I bet you would.
I mean, I see all these conflicting polls, you know, that is claiming that, oh, the race is tightening, and, you know, Romney is leading 5 points in some polls. And I'm just like,
what planet?
You know, this is a Gallup poll. He was up by 5 in some, if the election was...
What did they do, ask morons between the ages of 93 and 102?
I don't know, but, you know, I'm thinking Obama better get out there quoting some more Reagan right quick.
Now, that's just mean.
Oh, it's funny. You know, it's all just, you know, I've never, it is just so hideous, and I worry because I think the turnout, unless something, you know, it's just, I don't know. I don't know too many people who are invested, but we'll see, I guess. The more you see of Romney, though, God, that whole thing, oh, where'd you get them cookies from, 7-Eleven? I'm like, oh.
The whole idea that he had this little pogrom going on at Bain Capital where they fired people who weren't Mormons?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. He is really suspect with his weird-ass setup, you know? I mean, he's weird. His five sons, all of it is just strange.
Oh, and his five sons with the trust fund. Did you catch that?
Well, that's the thing, you know.
$100 million trust fund for his five sons.
Yeah.
On which he has never paid a single penny of taxes.
Well,
not a dime.
And also the way the media is just not even, you know, he's just going to get a pass. No discussion about his offshore money, why he's only releasing dribs and drabs of his tax returns, whereas all these other plutocrats at least have to provide a dozen years or a decade or more. He's done 1 year.
And that's enough for us.
And also, apparently, a lot of his records have been destroyed from when during his one term of governor. I mean, it's all super creepy and super secretive, and he's not even president yet.
Okay, and by the way, in answer to your question, Patty just wrote in a link to an ABC News blog, and Marco Rubio, Mormon turned Catholic.
See, okay, I know I wasn't too crazy. Well, I don't really care.
Yeah, that's your stealth visitor from Planet Kolob.
Yeah, okay, well, that's a problem, though, for all these fundies out there. How are they going to put up with, you know, some weird-ass...
Well, no, that's the thing. Everybody, you know, Jeb Bush says, oh, I think it would probably be best if it was Rubio. No, it would be best if it's Jeb Bush. The fundies and the evangelicals and the freaks and the goobers have got to have somebody to hang on to because, well, you know, Willard's going to give the commencement address at Jerry Falwell U. But that's not going to sell him because he's still going to be a Mormon at the end of the day, and all them good Baptists know all they need to know about the Mormons because Jesus never come around no damn Indians. Right?
Huh?
I mean, that's how they think.
Oh, no.
What? Wow. Jesus among the Indians? Get out of here. And then if they find out the real fun stuff about Jesus and Satan being brothers, you know, kind of like that movie with Will Ferrell and what's his name? Yeah, Step Brothers or whatever it was. Yeah, just like that. That's Jesus and Satan in Mormon theology. I mean, and I understand that all theologies have elements of absolutely batshit craziness in them, right? But, you know, if you tell a good Bible-believing Baptist or member of the Church of Christ who won't even sing with so much as a pitch pipe in the background, if you tell them that that Mitt Romney is saved because he's wearing magic underwear, well, people go, you know, Alabama stand, Mississippi stand, whatever, they're going to turn around and go, shit, no. No. There is some stuff up with which I will not put. And walk away. Because I have my fun with religion, but the bigots, the real bigots, the really religiously intolerant types are the ones who are most closely invested in their own.
Well, I just can't believe that we're going to have this Thurston Howe the Third, you know, running for president.
But we are.
It's like Richie Rich. I mean, it's just, you know, it's hideous. I don't know. He just seems to, I mean, there he is. And he's going to be the nominee. It's just, you know, I mean, I've never been a Republican, and I never will be, but are they, you know, what?
Yeah.
I don't know, anyway, so I don't know, but I'm a bit concerned when I hear it's so close already. I don't know what the...
But doesn't it have to be? Isn't that the only thing that the for-profit media report on? They're all... It's as if the people who write the tip sheets at Aqueduct or Santa Anita have all gone to work in mainstream broadcasting, and the only thing they know how to write about to this day is horse racing.
Well, do they have any more pictures of Hillary dancing or drinking? I mean, that's another thing.
No, it's unbecoming to an American politician to be seen drinking and cavorting about in her official... Oh, the shame. The flag is in the dirt.
Like, oh, come on. You know, as opposed to stealing people's children and drinking their blood like Cheney. At least she's out and about.
Well, and at least she's not... Okay, let's take it another step further. At least she's not standing in front of a bunch of African tribes people trying to dance like George Bush did. I mean, do you remember that photo? You remember that video?
Eyes. And remember, and she's not going through doors that don't exist. Remember that?
Well, there was that. but see these teabaggers and right wingers, and they've forgot. I mean, they've got an 8-year blank spot where Bush used to live.
Yeah, we don't ever hear about it. Ain't it amazing? No, anyway, I just was like, I saw that picture of Hillary. She, so what, man? Shit.
Well, I mean, you know, she's a global plutocrat and everything, but I got a soft spot for anybody who wants to unwind and have a little bit of damn fun.
Well, exactly. I don't know. I just, you know, it's just like you said.
Of course, if we had the full blown-up photo, she was probably dancing on indigenous people or, you know, somebody from the global south or you get, you know, a carpet of bones. Not because she's Hillary and she's evil, but because she's, you know, DLC, Democrat, third way, go along, get along. Let's all make money and be happy and let the little proles figure it out for themselves. Isn't she? I mean, and that's not to say I don't like her.
Well, I mean, and it's just because the whole dog thing is another one that's like beyond the beyond. Are they really trying to drum up a problem?
Yes, they really are.
From when he was, what was he, like 6 years old in Indonesia or something?
Yeah, and you know what? It's proof to me that apparently all these uber right wingers have some sort of basic cable that only goes to 12, you know, and 7 of those are religious channels, because I mean I don't know what do they think people eat in other countries?
I don't, you know, everybody.
What do you eat when eating is not something you do for fun? You eat what is slow enough to catch, because now what I've, you know, it's obvious they've never gone up to the Travel Channel and seen, you know, Anthony Bourdain eating warthog rectum.
Well, no, and also, I mean, think about the way our food is delivered. Give me a break. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the last people to be talking about what other people are eating. Oh my God.
Right, because we have CAFOs.
You know, give me a break. But anyway, I just, you know, it's just way, way up north. Anyway, I haven't even had a chance to check out any sports. Got any?
No, the last delightful thing I saw was, you know, the New York, the Jets fans, or the Yankees fans booing.
Booing him.
Yeah. Of course, that was after he got his Manny and Petty in West Hollywood. And before and after he delivered the Sunday morning Easter service, so Jesus.
Well, you know, I know it's horrible to say, but I'm gonna laugh if that whole Denver thing is a complete wash too.
Yeah.
And I see that Washington D.C. might be getting the last Negro quarterback. That dude looks amazing. That Griffin guy.
Oh, right. And you should hear him speak. He is absolutely a delight to listen to talk.
All right. Well, I just was like, oh, well, he's going to go to D.C. You know, he's going to go to the Redskins. I'm thinking, shoot, that's a big pickup.
Yeah, and I feel, but I kind of feel bad for Robert Griffin. That's going and working for that crazy bastard that owns the Redskins. That's right up there with going to work for Jerry Jones and the Redskins. And the Redskins fans will now be thoroughly pissed at me. But
well, I don't really understand how those two control freaks work out together, Shanahan and Snyder. How must that be?
Oh, that's too much to contemplate. And yeah, I feel sorry for Robert Griffin over Shanahan too.
Well, are they both height challenged, Shanahan and Snyder? Do you know?
Snyder's a little man, isn't he?
He's like 5'2".
Okay, I'm not going to say he's a hobbit or anything.
I don't know how, but I know he's really so tiny.
He's more like an orc.
Shanahan, if he's also short, but at any rate. I don't know what the Redskins are going to do, but I look like they're going to get that guy, so it has to be a help for them.
Well, and you know, hopefully he'll work out a nice, nice load of money up front, because how they going to keep him from getting just stomped? Because the one thing you don't do is get yourself a shiny new quarterback out of college and just stick him in there the first year.
That's the way that the NFL is going, isn't it? They did that to all those quarterbacks.
Yeah, going all the way back to Peyton, didn't it?
Yeah,
weren't there a couple of seasons where every time Peyton barked a signal, somebody was through that Swiss cheese line and up in his mask?
Yeah, well, and look what the Sanchez. Look at that poor kid.
Yeah.
You know? And is it Bradford or is it one of them ones?
Oh, Sam Bradford at the Rams.
Problems, isn't it? You know,
he was made out of spit and toilet paper coming into the pros. Anybody who thought that he was going to be a healthy quarterback for more than two or three games, that was delusional, wishful, magical thinking.
Yeah, well, he was all right for a minute, and then he wasn't, and it's just not surprising. You're right about that. But, I mean, no one's going to have the luxury like that kid at Green Bay who was able to sit on the bench.
Right, well, and that's the thing that's so bizarre, Sandra, is that there are examples of what happens when you do it right. How many years did Steve Young sit behind Joe Montana?
Oh, hell yeah, and it paid off big time, of course.
And because you're not getting a lot of snaps, but you're sitting there learning the whole system to the point that it's second nature inside your mind by the time you're starting.
Yeah.
But you know, you just get thrown to the lions and you don't build you just get cast into the abyss.
Well, yeah, that's why that whole New York Jets stuff should be entertaining, because it's also vicious. They already have a lot of backbiting about Sanchez, you know, that's coming out of their organization. So, and then now he has that freak breathing down his neck.
Yeah, and don't think there won't be a Fundy campaign in Gotham, because there are Fundies there too.
Yeah, yes. Yes. Well, anyway, there was something else that you remind me of with the football. Now I can't. Damn it. Oh, well. Maybe they'll come back to me.
Yeah, it'll hit. We've got it. I'm at least in town. I'm behind the microphone next week, so.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll catch up with you then, so have a good weekend.
All right. You too, Sandra. Good hearing from you.
All right. Bye.
Bye now. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, sir.
Yes, sir. I am currently enjoying a union-made beverage and slapping on some maple and raspberry rods and hickory and all that good stuff and smoking up some an 8-pound roast here. And,
oh, beautiful. Hot diggity.
Got some, got all the ingredients for my hot slaw ready to go, and
you are so going to go wild. Are the girls big enough now that they can do a little bit of spicy here and there?
Oh yeah, Brother Bob, they can do, not if you tell them. If you tell them spicy, it freaks their little brains out. I don't want hot, but you know. They're so used to it, like they've acclimated. They don't even know.
Yeah, they'll get to the point where anything short of that hellacious Indian curry that features those ghost pepper things. Oh, this isn't hot. David in Tennessee sent me a couple of those things, and I mean to tell you, they are hot. Those bot jalopia or whatever they are. Mm. No, I mean, you know, I waved one of them at a pot of chili from across the house, and you know, it just started bubbling and looking malevolent.
You know, I mean, have you seen, but, you know, here's the thing, though. They have discovered and bred so many of these chilies now that Buchalopia is, like, 23rd on the list.
Is it really?
Seriously.
Oh, God, you get no time at the top. No time in the sun anymore.
They have a long way to go to Capsium, but not a lot.
But Monsanto's not involved with it. These are people who are cross pollinating peppers because they're like chili freaks, right?
Yeah, you know, these are people who, I don't know, you know, like we were talking the other day. You know, these are people who do the selective, you know, squaring and breeding. And I said biologist, and I meant,
botanist.
You know what I'm talking about. Botanist. That's what I meant. Not biologist, which is biology too, but you know, it's more botany. And you know, it's a fascinating thing. I mean, it really is. I mean, if you ever, you know, put 15 minutes of reading into it, it's quite interesting. But there's a lot of work involved, you know. And you know, they find a couple of hot of this and a little bit of hot that, and they go into the boonies and they go, oh my goodness, that pepper's hot. Let's bring that back too. And let's make this one, have a little happy time with this one, and oh, what does this baby make? Oh my God, you know, 12 million Scoville units, you know. But I don't know, that kind of stuff looks pretty painful to me, so.
Yeah,
you know, yeah.
But yeah, see, you're just going to use a little garden variety cayenne powder in your hot slaw, and the thing is.
Yeah, but see, I only have the 90,000.
Oh, but that'll be okay. I mean, it shouldn't.
I'll use a little bit of that.
You don't want it to overpack. You want all of those flavors to happen at the same time, and then the spicy runs up from behind while you're still enjoying the vinegar and the mustardy stuff and the cabbage flavor and a little bit of carrot going on. And don't be heavy-handed with that onion. If you've got like a head of cabbage, and you've got I'd say of regular carrots, not those whittled down things in a bag, of regular carrots, probably, you know, probably 4 carrots to a head of cabbage. And then I'd start off with like a third of the onion.
I like onion.
Oh, I know, but that onion will run over, the onion will run plumb over top of everything you're doing.
Even red?
Even red.
A red sweet, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's profound. So what you want, but make sure, you know, maybe get on that tonight so that it can sit, you know, once you've got it all mixed up and it's the right color of yellow and everything, just kind of press it down in the bowl, lay some plastic wrap over it, and let it sit out and let the mustard and the vinegar and everything do its thing.
Yes, sir.
It shouldn't. You shouldn't have any floaty liquid. I mean, it should have its own integrity. It's not going to be right. You know what I mean?
I'm on it. I'm on it, Brother Bob. Yeah, I'm on it.
You can. Yeah, just like just email photos or whatever. I'll advise along the way.
I certainly shall. We're going to see what this big old pork butt. We got a nice little rub on it. And,
oh yeah, and as you,
I like maple.
Yeah. Oh yes, absolutely.
I like maple. I like using maple. I could see that the lime, it's dripping that nice sweet maple sap because it's not dried out. It's
no, that'll be very, very nice. And if you want to mop it a little along the way with a mix of apple juice and apple cider vinegar, that will not hurt it at all.
Yeah. Well, I am not opening it until it's done.
Okay. So you've gone pro. Yeah. You understand.
Yes, sir. I have it's sitting under a bath with a little coriander. I like those little things. They're fragrant. I have a little coriander, some apples, apple cider vinegar, a little water.
Yeah, see, that's going to be great. That's going to be perfect. You don't need to mop.
Yeah. It's humid in there. I can see it. Oh, that's all right.
Oh, that's a beautiful
thing.
That's all right. So this is tomorrow's lunch, I would guess.
Yeah, well, there's a fight going on tomorrow, and people always tend to say, "Yo, what you cooking?" And I say, "Well, I got pork butt, I got pizza, I got a fight, and you bring some beer, and we can do it." And it's a good way to, it's a good excuse, I mean, I've still been up dealing with this pizza place stuff. I definitely got to get this stuff done. I look forward to, I'm not the biggest NFL fan, but I'm going to take advantage of that market sector, and I will have a large screen TV, and
that's just smart marketing.
Yeah, that's, I won't watch. I'll have the horn in the ear, not on Sunday, but you know what I mean, on Monday and all those other, I'll have specials, and I'm going to do most of my stuff. I've also figured I'm going to do it mostly in the wood oven. I'm going to do chicken wings in the oven if that goes along. I'm gonna do everything in the oven. I don't need a big greasy fryer, because most of the magic with chicken wings really happens with getting the good stuff for starters, without the injected Monsanto broth or Conag broth, whatever the hell they put in that. Getting the good stuff without that, and then it has everything to do with the butter, and then the sauce. And as long as you got that going, you're good to go. Because let's face it, Hooters is terrible. Hooters is just atrocious. What an atrocious place for wings. It's an outrage. And no, I don't want to. That's the other thing. I don't like watching lecherous men. So when I see Mitt Romney or some Catholic priest talking some smack, man, aren't they just? He's just lecherous, isn't he?
Oh,
lecherous.
That and the reverb and please.
My God.
Why not just go ahead and offer a dispensation? Call up that other religious freak and see if you can see if he'd mind if he's got it copyrighted. If he doesn't, work in some bulletproof teleprompters while you're at it, Father.
Yeah, exactly. What the hell was he talking about? Scaring these poor freaks that are already afraid of going to hell as it is. Scaring the children.
But that's what they've got. They got fear.
That's all they got.
They really are. The church is a Monty Python skit.
Yes, sir. And what we have on our side is apathy. And I'll tell you what, fear trumps apathy.
Well, yes, it does.
So when we don't go out to vote, I can't stand. I mean, I am not the biggest fan of what he's doing.
I'm going out to vote, but I know that none of the above is going to be my choice for a whole bunch of races. I am going to follow through on what I said a number of months ago. In the primary, I'm going to leave Mr. Obama's name blank too, because it's the primary.
Yeah.
Because he's going to run in the general anyway, but it might be worth it to, stick my little hand up and go, "Yoo-hoo, over here. We're leaving it blank
for
a reason."
Don't leave it blank. Write it in nobody. in honor of Wavy Gravy, because, you know, nobody loves the poor, and nobody really cares about you anyway, and
right.
Nobody's responsible, and, you know, nobody's the one. Nobody's
That's so true. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. You know, nobody. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, God, I'd love to support. I'd love to be enthusiastic about the guy, but he doesn't understand, you know, when he goes after people for medical marijuana. Who the hell do you think is your, who's your base, you asshole?
Yeah, who's voting? Wait, did you miss the memo? You know, well, that's where that's one of those moments where the secretary of Jesus Barack comes up and taps him on the shoulder. Yeah?
I mean,
Jesus Barack!
Does Axelrod have a Twitter?
I don't know.
I'm about to.
David, I bet you David Plouffe does.
Yeah, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Why? Why? Really, why? You think we're stupid? You don't think we know about the prison industrial complex? You don't think, now you're talking about drug testing people at work? For real? For real? Really? Really, Barack? Jesus, don't make us go through Mitt Romney for 4 years. God damn it. I can't believe this shit. Seriously? Really? Really? Really?
Really?
I mean, I don't know, Barack, you smoked it. What happened to you? You know, all the music you listen to, all those guys are smoking it. Most of the movies you watch.
Yeah, speaking of which, it just happened to be on the tube the other night when we were falling asleep in our seedy little motel room in D.C., or way the hell outside D.C., that Walk Hard, The Legend of Dewey Hoosis, you know the film? John C. Reilly.
Don't do it, Dewey!
Yeah, and the opens, and yeah, right, and Tim Meadows is in there smoking. Oh, no, it's not a dick. You don't want this drug, Dewey. Oh, it'll make me crazy. No, it won't make you crazy. Oh, I see, so it's highly addictive. No, it's not addictive at all. Oh, it's really expensive. No, it's the cheapest drug there is. Don't do it, Dewey.
It makes you feel good. Gets rid of all this.
You don't want this, but I think I do. You don't. Okay, come on in. Yeah. Yeah, but you know, just like hand holding is a gateway to wild street sex.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, you're holding hands, and the next thing you know, you're listening to Why Don't We Do It in the Road.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's the same thing with pot. You know, one good hit, and you're out there hustling for, you know, smack and I don't know, pharmaceuticals. I mean, that's where pharmaceuticals.
Well, I mean, you know, the one thing that the president does have, so maybe we should trust his judgment on, is he does have that time machine.
Oh, yes.
And maybe he's seen it. You know, don't forget, President Obama has a time machine, and he is responsible for everything that's ever happened.
Well, you know, he was.
God.
I mean, he's out there oppressing the church just like Hitler and Stalin. He's just like Bismarck.
Just like them. You're just like Bismarck.
Just like Clemenceau.
Like yeah. Just like.
Because see, he was talking to a flock who think Clemenceaux are those little oranges you buy at Christmas.
You get them in the box.
Right. Exactly. They're cuties or whatever. Bismarck, they sell those down at the deli.
Mmm, they're delicious.
Right. So, really? He's just like Bismarck and Clemenceau. And so the little faithful walked out of the cathedral with the reverberation still ringing in their ears, and they were sitting around their after mass, the Sunday dinner, saying, oh, he's just like Clemenceau. Oh, really? Yeah, I think so too.
Mm-hmm.
It would, you know what? If you could get yourself a good set of priestly robes, and I don't know, use a little, you know, chloral hydrate or something on the bishop, and walk out in his robes looking all fat and happy like you just had a little boy for lunch, and you sit there and say,
oh, God.
Many people have oppressed the church. Think of kumquat in the 17th century. Well, you know, the idiots in the pews are going to walk out and go to post-mass lunch and say, you know, I can't believe, you know, Father is so smart. He's just like that horrible dictator kumquat.
And I still have haven't seen his birth certificate.
He's probably
still dealing with
they're
that.
They're probably related.
Yeah, probably are. And he ate dog.
he ate a dog. Well, that's way worse than what Mitt Romney did. I mean, Seamus loved it. He just shit himself and he had to hose him off with that cold water. And I'll tell you right now, I don't ever do that to my dog. Yeah, a hot summer day, I'll give him a squirt of the hose if I'm watering, you know, my hedges or whatever. But my dog gets a nice
It puts
warm
the
bath.
Shampoo on its fur or else it gets the hose some more.
I mean, come on now. What is that? You know, I mean, goodness, good. It's like, yeah, I mean, and it isn't. I mean, that's what Mitt Romney is. He's like Clark Griswold. Holiday roll. Oh, see it, right? Right? Roll him up. We're in a bad neighborhood.
Sitting here winking at Christy Brinkley. Yeah, oh, hell yeah.
Ooh, hey, ooh, look at her. You know, he's falling asleep, driving off the exit. Clean, poor dog. What about that dog? What about the dog you almost hit? You know, they don't even take a break off the poor dog and you hurt him. He's meow. Right? Because the owner had to pull him. I saw the goddamn movie. That's Mitt Romney. He did that.
Yes.
It's his fault. You know, I mean, Obama, so what? He's over in the freaking whatever the hell. And that's the thing. You know, it's like, and you nailed it because that's, you know, people who, you know, have distended bellies and deal with starvation and all these other things, they're going to eat a dog.
Dog? We get dog today? Cool.
They're there. And, I mean, when I was in the service, you know, when I was in the Navy, I'll never forget walking into the billeting office, and I saw one of the Filipino guys there. I'm like, hey, bud, what are you doing? What are you eating? Oh, dogo dogo. I'm like, dogo dogo, what? What? What are you eating? I mean, and granted, it was a culture shock for me. It really was. But he ate it. It looked like chicken. How the hell is he supposed to know? He's a six-year-old kid. You know, but it's like, you know, oh, so maybe Barack eats bugs, too. Ew, I can't vote for a guy that eats bugs.
Well, no, see, there's a subtext to all this, Brother Albert. It just goes to show he's not American like us. If he was really American, he'd be eating chitlins like he's supposed to.
Yes, right. Exactly. Yep, he thinks he could take the bone out of his nose and fool us.
Because we all know he's a Kenyan.
That's right. It's a Kenyan usurper. I know he is. I've seen his birth certificate.
Online.
Still on that.
Orly Tates done showed it to me.
Yeah.
Right after she showed me her Orly Tates.
Yeah, oh yeah, brother. They are riding that one to the end. You know, I mean, they are not going to give up. I mean, even the rich folks that visit Mitten's wife's birthday party, you know, even they, you know, like these are the rich ladies, and you think that they're educated. No. Nope.
Nope,
you're an idiot. Yep, you're an idiot. It's like, I mean,
That's like, you know, being a mother is some of the most important work, and we have to reverence mothers. Yeah, stop it. Romney. Consuela, don't change baby's diaper for a minute. I want to get here. Don't start until I get in the room. Okay. Now, when you get down to the last little tape, I want to put it on, okay? Okay, I'm coming in here. I've got the tweezers. There. Oh, look, I've diapered baby. Burp him now, Consuela, would you?
Yes, thank you. Actually, they don't even say thank you, I guarantee it.
No. That will be all, Consuela.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you are dismissed. And then, I mean, that's the other thing, you know. I mean, I my family has grown up on the horn. You know, I've grown up with all you guys, and you know, I mean, we all know that we've been in a recession for a little longer than, you know, 2009. And you know, it was my wife and I made that decision that, you know, I would stay home and deal with the children and handle all that. And it is hard. It is work. It really is. But I'll tell you right now, Ann, now that I got another one on the way, and I have a business that I mean, that's really the only thing I could really do. You know, that's the only thing that I really have. That's my skill, and I got to go, and that's what I love to do. I have to do this. Now I got to sit here and scrape up every dime I can, you know, to go and work. Something that, you know, or if I don't do that, you know, God, who knows where we're going to be. If I don't go and do this, you know, I'm not going to be able to do what I want to do for my children. You know, but somebody like her, how dare you? How dare you? Your
children have $100 million fucking dollar trust fund?
Yeah, but that's only $20 million apiece.
I don't care. That is ridiculous.
It is. I mean,
what is that?
It's obscene. It is obscene.
It's obscene. What can't you do with that kind of money? You know, what can't you do? Oh, besides not pay taxes. You know, you can't pay, you know, I can't pay taxes on it. My money.
Yeah, but see, when each of those, here. When each of those Osmonds, I mean, Romneys, gets, gets their $20 million, they're going to have to give $2 million of it to the Magic Underwear Fund immediately. And then they'll only have 18 to not pay taxes on.
Oh my God! Only $18 million.
I mean, they can hardly even if they combine all their money, they can hardly raid a small corporation with that kind of. I mean, that ain't even good walking around money.
Yeah, I mean, goodness gracious! You can only well, I guess I'm back to first class. No more private jets for me. Because I'm going to have to summer in Aruba.
I mean, if they wanted to buy a Gulfstream, they'd have to go in together, because if one of them bought a Gulfstream, then he'd only have $13
million. Yeah, I know, only. I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, I don't even know how they're going to find a roof over their head. How are they going to even imagine it? I mean, how could they find a roof over their head?
Heartbreak. Do I hear a bird chirping in the background? That's just delightful.
Yes, sir, Brother Bob. I am actively paying attention to my...
It is a beautiful evening in southwest Wisconsin, it sounds like. Brother Albert, I'm going to hit it. We're almost done with Friday on the Front Porch. That butt smoking must be attended to, and we need to make sure that the folks in Tennessee understand we're not talking about anything that's a consequence of, you know, hand-holding or anything.
Yeah.
But you've got work to do, brother. Have yourself a wonderful weekend.
You too, Brother Bob. We'll talk to you later.
All right.
Good. Give him a love.
Will do. Bye now. Brother Albert, smoking a pork butt, and the birds are happy about it. It's just lovely. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, apparently God's in his heaven and all's right with the world.
Well, consider the lilies.
Well, I was going to suggest that he use Applejack and Grey Poupon. That's a wonderful thing to
eat. It is, isn't it?
Because I've used Applejack in making pate, and that takes all the bitterness out of the liver and all that stuff.
Yes, it absolutely does.
Applejack is a wonderful cooking ingredient, or in this case, condiment, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, it makes a wonderful mop too. You know, if you're doing it in such a way that you can open the oven door or open the smoker or whatever, just to get one of those little sauce mops and just splop, 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 splop. It's wonderfully tasty, but he's got a pan of stuff underneath it, so the vapors will be rising, and he'll get the flavor the same way, and it's going to be yummy.
Sounds great. No, but going back to what we were talking about as far as the First Crusade is concerned, you know, Bob, there were a lot of problems between the Arabs and the Christians back as, oh, God, when, you know, Islam began to spread, it was spread, you know, with the sword, basically, and they went up into Spain, and they were defeated eventually, I think, at the Battle of Tours by Charles Martel in 732. So it wasn't the first time that.
They didn't fully get rid of them until the reign of Ferdinand and Isabella, did they?
No, they didn't. As a matter of fact, they were when they recovered Spain from the Moors. It was an uneasy uneasy relationship. But when the Moors were in charge of Spain, I believe they were tolerant. I know they were tolerant of Christians.
And they were tolerant of Jews, too.
Right. And, of course, when things began to change, the Jews had to become conversos, and then, of course, you had the Inquisition, and lots of bad things happened there. That's what happened. There's a history of conflict between the two faiths, so there's no question about it.
Well, and it was in fact Alexis Comnenus I who put out because I'd actually read about this some time back. He put out a request to the Pope for help against the Seljuk Turks who were attacking from Anatolia, and made a promise that he would write the schism, because the great schism had happened by then.
Yeah, the popes were allowed to be on the Babylonian captivity. Not to mention the fact that the Kirks were surrounding Vienna, and they had moved up into Austria. I mean, they were a fairly prolific in the spread of their empire. But that's just one comment about the a thumbnail sketch between Islam and Christianity. So,
but His Holiness the Bishop was playing a little fast and loose with his history there.
Well, a lot of people do that these days. You know that, and I know that. And as far as, you know, going back to the Pope and the Catholic Church, now, Pius XI, when he was Cardinal Pacelli, was the Papal Nuncio in Berlin, and thought he understood the Nazis pretty well and thought he could get along with them, and he did conclude a concordat with Adolf Hitler, and it was one of the milestones in Hitler's rise to power, the fact that his government could reach a concordat. Of course, Bismarck had done the same thing with the church. And Bismarck's a man whom I admire greatly. He was a very astute politician, unlike Adolf Hitler. But it's strange to note that when Hitler was a boy, he sang in the choir, and in the church where he was baptized and attended Mass, there was a statue of a bishop, and above the bishop there was a swastika. And, of course, it was not the swastika that Hitler envisioned with the straight lines, but the curved lines. And of course, back then, the swastika didn't have the connotations then that it does today. And
it was an old Vedic symbol in the Indo-European tradition, was it not?
It was a symbol of good luck, basically. And you find it in India and all over the world. And it was used quite frequently in decoration. As a matter of fact, it's not a bad symbol to look at. It, you know, it's a very catchy symbol from the standpoint of, you know, having some type of standard. And of course, later on, when Hitler turned against the church totally, I mean, one of the things he stated openly was he wanted to wheel in German artillery and level the Vatican. And if he was a Catholic, he wasn't a very good Catholic, because all of his Nazism and all of the crap that Himmler and people like that, Himmler was the worst one, they wanted to basically substitute their religion, their old pagan-type religion, for Christianity. And, of course, the Nazi calendar was marked with the summer and winter solstice and things of that nature, and the use of runes and all this, and Himmler had built this huge complex at Babelsberg, which he wanted to be the new, I guess, Camelot. I don't know if you
Valhalla, you know, yeah, right.
If you can imagine the SS having any type of form of Camelot, they were pretty rough crowd themselves. But that's what Hitler tried to do, because Hitler considered Christianity to be weak and flaccid. And so
once again, it would appear that the bishop was a little bit afield in suggesting that refusing to turn America into a Roman Catholic theocracy is the same as all that.
No, I don't agree with the fact that if that's what he was saying about turning America into a Roman Catholic theocracy.
Well, I mean, he was demanding the right to compel every American citizen to follow Roman Catholic doctrine.
Well, I guess it may be. I mean, if that's what you
say. The clip was in there where he's telling his flock to go out and be heroic Catholic soldiers?
Well, I mean, Catholics have always been very aggressive as far as the spread of their faith is concerned. You know that, and I know that. As a matter of fact, when a Protestant marries a Catholic, part of the condition of the wedding thing is that the children will be brought up in the church, the Catholic Church. And that's just the way they operate. That's what it's always been. But, you know, I had hoped that there was a more ecumenical spirit being promulgated from the Vatican and the Holy See.
Well, what they did to the nuns certainly doesn't speak to that optimism, Jim.
Well, hope springs eternal, but as far as I'm not too clear on that business with the nuns. Can you shorthand
Well, basically, they got called down because they were not out there parroting the words of the U.S. Catholic Conference of Catholic Bishops and screaming about Obama. What they really did to get on the wrong side of the Vatican was they wrote a letter because, you know, these are nuns, and nuns actually do minister to the least among us, to use that phrase. Pardon?
They do a lot of good work.
Yeah. And so they wrote a letter suggesting that the Affordable Care Act might be good for people to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. And the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops was, of course, screaming no, 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 because the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is controlled by a bunch of right-wing ideologues. The other thing that they did is that they kept their mouths shut about what is referred to as church teaching on abortion.
Oh.
In other words, they went about the daily business of doing all that Book of Matthew stuff about feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, attending to the sick, and visiting people in prison. Which is pretty Christian, if you want to get down to it.
Yeah, I agree.
But the church dropped a rock on them and said that they have to be out there screaming in the streets about abortion and basically calling Obama Hitler.
Oh, I see. Well, that is indeed regrettable. That is indeed regrettable. I would just like to be a fly on the wall when President Obama was a guest of the Pope in Rome and visited the Vatican. And
see, the nuns were called down by the Office of the Doctrine of the Faith, you know, basically the Inquisition. It really is the direct successor of the Inquisition. And that's the office that the present Pope occupied as John Paul II's enforcer.
Yeah, he was the one who was called upon to be the right or wrong person as far as dogma is concerned.
Yeah, he's the one that was in charge of issuing those commands that parents of raped children be told to remain silent lest they harm their immortal souls. All of that. That all came out of that same office. Hey, Jim, I got to roll out of here, though. It's 2 minutes till. Have yourself a wonderful weekend, all right?
Likewise.
All right, take care. It's our buddy Jim. And a good way to end the evening. It is 2 minutes till out of here. I am happy to report both baskets were snatched up, and there will be two baskets going out, and that Robert's challenge has been away from the interweb tubes for too long, $100 challenge, has been met as well. Thank you very kindly to all of you for helping in that regard. Everyone have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back at it on Monday. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Our volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee, who is enjoying a night of baseball this evening. Thanks to John Fox and Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is, I hope, next.